All right, well, on the phone with us now is Johnny from Human Drama. Are you there, Johnny?
I sure am. How are you?
Oh, great, great. Glad you could join us tonight. It's a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we begin, why don't we start off and get the boring stuff out of the way, like how Human Drama began, how long you guys have been around, and how you started up in the mid-80s.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like I can barely remember when we first started. Actually, the core of the band was actually formed back in 1979. We were together 79, moved to California 85 from New Orleans, Louisiana, and we got a deal with RCA about 3 years later, 1988. So,
Yeah. Now, your original name was The Models, correct?
yeah, we were calling the Models. Dot was always dying to change that name, so finally we did that in 85.
Yeah, I read that about you. You actually came up with the name, but you hated it.
Hated it.
How
yeah.
Does that work? How do you decide on a name and then.
Well, it was the new wave days,
Uh-huh.
and there were things like the Saints and the A's and whoever else. And when I thought of models, I was thinking more like model airplane kind of thing or model cars or something. And I mean, I must have not have put a whole lot of thought into it because I look back on it because models. I mean, the pretty boy
Well,
A's
yeah.
thing.
Glam.
Yeah,
Everything.
so that was a big mistake.
All right, now Human Drama signed with RCA Records in November of 1988.
I believe that was it, yeah.
Your first release, Hopes and Prayers, Dreams, Heart, Soul, Mind, Love, Death,
Yeah.
was a four-song EP.
Right.
And then later in May of 89, or no, excuse me, it was followed in November by a full-length album
That's right.
called Feel. Now, do you feel that RCA got behind Human Drama as much as it should have?
Well, I mean, it's obvious to everyone involved, I'm sure RCA would admit it too, that they were not prepared for the type of band that we were, and they also weren't prepared from East Coast to West Coast, because one of the things that I found out about the time that Feel came out was that the East Coast office and the West Coast office did not work well together. The first problem we ran into was we could not get press east of the Mississippi because they would not do it until we did something in the East, like a tour or something. But yet we could get no budget to tour. So as you can see, we were kind of doomed from the start.
Yeah. Well, RCA must have saw something in you because they signed you initially, but.
It's a strange thing, and it's something that even, like 10, 12 years later that I still remember. And I remember when they announced the signing at the RCA convention in Nashville, the president of the company stood up at the podium and said that he would like to announce they've just signed the best live band that he has ever seen, and he repeated it. And that was really a nice, vote of confidence for us, and we felt real strongly about being signed to RCA based on that comment. The strange thing of it all was when we went to him and asked him for tour support and to hop on the Peter Murphy tour for his Deep album, they told us that they could not give us any tour support, nor could they put us out on the road.
Wow.
Which, if you think about his statement about being the best live band ever, in his opinion,
Yeah.
and then saying no to tour support, you can kind of see the confused nature of this signing and our entire, more 3 year career with RCA.
Oh, you were with him that long. I didn't realize it
Yeah,
was.
I think by the time we got signed till the time I got off was about 3 years.
So towards the end there, I guess you asked for your release, and under a little bit of controversy, they gave it to you?
Well, it wasn't a whole bunch of controversy because I put the president who said that stuff about us on the spot. And I simply said that, sure, I'll send you my new batch of demos, which would have been for the world inside, of course.
Yeah.
If you will re-sign the contract and just, I don't want anything over the top. I just want you to sign the contract that states we will get all the things that you promised us upon the original signing, which was the tour support, the video, how long they would go to radio with our record, and how the promotion companies, coincide their work with the release, both East Coast and West Coast. And he said he could not sign anything to that. It's just not done. And at that point, I just simply said, well, I'm not going to give you my new demos, and as a friend, I ask you to please give us our release. And he did.
Yeah, and not too long after that, you signed with Triple X.
Yeah, it seemed like moments because I was kind of, desperate to keep the career going and not just let it die. So I immediately went to Triple X and asked them if they could, release a single and then do the follow-up album.
Now, in today's music scene, as I'm sure was true in the 90s, it seems that your label determines your fate. Are you confident you made the right decision to switch to XXX?
Well, I don't know that I agree with that comment. I think we have play a bigger hand. Bands play a bigger hand than it is usually said.
Than the label?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a bigger part. I mean, surely mm-hmm. it is the label, the greater percentage. But 40% of it is the band, I think. It's probably like a 60-40 thing.
Uh-huh.
Now, I was able to keep my career going. Was I able to sell millions of records and buy a house in Malibu? No. But that's not really what it's about, you know?
Yeah.
So with XXX, I was given a label that let me do what it is that I want to do, what I want to express. So in those ways, yes, I did make, I think, the best decision.
Okay.
RCA, I'm confident that if I would have given them the demos, that record never would have come out, and then they would own it.
Mm. 1993, Pinups.
Yeah.
How did this come about with XXX?
At the World Inside record release party back in 92, I think, we decided instead of playing the record that was blaring, you know, and we were celebrating blaring over the sound system, that it would be kind of redundant. So I figured what we'll do to make it special is I will show my influences and just play a bunch of cover songs for the party. And XXX didn't know that we were going to do that. And right after the party, Peter Huer, the president of XXX, came up and said, "We have to do this record next." So it was like really nice, you know.
Uh-huh.
I was doing old Bowie stuff and T-Rex and things like that.
I share your liking of Leonard Cohen.
Well, there's few of us, I believe.
He's in my opinion, one of the least, one of the greatest artists of our time and least appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I imagine it was a big deal for you to record a cover version of If It Be Your Will.
It was a big deal?
Yeah, for you.
Very big deal to me. Beautiful words.
So.
You know, just I just love the desperation and the tension in that song.
You also have a great amount of diversity in your work. Your style changes from album to albums. Violins, violas, cellos to, you know, just different styles and different albums. Are you continually re-expressing yourself, or do you feel that you're just on a musical road and are following the path that's before you?
Well, you know, I've never really planned it out or thought about it like, okay, next record, no guitars or no, you know, less drumming. It's like I get an idea for a song that you know, kind of grows into the concept of an album. And then by that time, I just know what you know, how this is supposed to sound when it comes back off of the CD to me.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot of planning. I think that the reason I got into strings so much on The World Inside was that I was using a lot of keyboard pads, you know, and strings from my keyboardist. And I figured, man, you know, let's just get the people
get
in
the
here
real
and
thing.
Do it real, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of that simple. It wasn't like, you know, any big, you know, like a lot of intentions to be all fancy and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or to do anything different. It just kind of made sense to me.
Okay. Now, how did A Million Years come to be featured on the Dead Souls soundtrack?
I think, I guess it's pretty simple. The director of that movie has been a follower of Human Drama for many years. And that was just, you know, like his favorite song. He felt like with the romantic nature of that movie that it would be the appropriate track. That's the best that I can come up with.
Yeah,
same point. That's the way it happened.
Now, you're currently involved in a solo project. Is that correct?
Well, I'm planning it.
You're planning on it?
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, I've gotten to the studio and I've recorded one track that we'll probably throw up on one of the websites. So that, in fact, we're going to put it up on this tangledweb.com.
Mm-hmm.
Just so people can kind of get like a little, you know, just kind of hear what I'm going after.
So you're just kind of feeling it out, deciding if that's something you want to do?
Well, I'm going to do it. I can't tell you what label it's going to be on, or, you know, whether I'm going back to XXX or what I'm going to do with
mm-hmm.
it.
Are there any other projects that you're currently working on?
I just finished an album for a project called Memory Burn, which is just a few guys. It's Steve Caton, who plays in Tori Amos's band.
Mm-hmm.
A drummer friend of mine from New York named Rob Korn, YA, and the pianist from a band that I produced called Miracle Mile, And so it's just us put together a nice little project.
So you keep busy.
Yeah, what's that?
You keep busy.
You know, I mean, it's fun. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's very creative, and I like to be in those situations as much as I can possibly be.
So I know you're in L.A. at the moment, but are you living in L.A. now, or are you still in New York?
I'm still in New York.
Okay.
I just came out here to do the record, and now I'm actually, I was doing a little recording work tonight on the solo project.
And you've got some shows coming up in the beginning of December.
December the 4th at Scream in Hollywood.
Okay. Now, what do you attribute your large Mexican audience to?
You know, after getting to know the people on a few trips there, they're the most passionate, as a whole, the most passionate group of people that I've ever met.
Because you play down there quite a bit.
As often as we can, which is usually like once every year and a half.
Okay.
Because it's very difficult to get business done down there. But
you developed a good following.
We've developed an amazing following, and if it was like that for us in the States, I think that our project would be, you know, much more known.
Do you think L.A. held you back in those earlier years? Bands have a way of getting sucked into L.A. and have trouble escaping from it just because of the way the scene is, and they have trouble breaking out on a national level.
No, I never felt that at all.
No?
I felt L.A. at the time that we broke out was real. Was a real creative time, and I think that it actually helped us.
Okay.
Again, what happened with the situation with RCA? I mean, you know, there's a lot of bands. There's only so many bands that can actually break through on a big level.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, I wish that would have been with Island Records, and they would have broken us like U2 broke. I would appreciate more people getting to hear my stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not too bitter about it. I guess every now and then I have my bouts of bitterness, but not so much. I mean, I feel very fortunate to have had this career that I've had.
I was going to avoid this question, but I got to say it. Because it's been overplayed, but the Gothic community really has picked up your work.
And yeah.
They've adopted you as one of their favorite sons in a lot of circles.
Like the grandfather of Gothic.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, it's Peter Murphy, so maybe I'm like the older uncle or something.
Yeah, and I listen to your music, and it's, I can see the association there. I can see why they enjoy it, but I don't consider you Gothic.
I don't even understand what actually that is, and I know that whenever I go see like a concert bill and it's supposedly of the Gothic nature, the band basically blow.
Uh-huh.
It's just, there's no thought, it's dark,
yeah,
for the sake of being dark, and it's just bad. No effort to songwriting. Every point you make in a song is different. Like, it's all about being dark and spooky and the same type of musicianship.
Yeah, I gotta say, probably the one Gothic band that I do enjoy would be Typo Negative.
Okay, and I don't even see that as really fitting into, like, what I'm talking about.
As being Gothic, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you are correct, though, in your... of describing the majority of the Gothic, quote-unquote, Gothic bands out there.
Right.
All right, so what does the future hold for Human Drama?
Yeah, who knows? Best Of is out right now. We'll probably make a good attempt at touring next year with it, like doing a full tour, getting back to Mexico, and attempting to get to some of the festivals in Europe if we can pull it off.
Ah.
Affordability comes into play.
Yeah, it's got to be hard taking a whole crew over to Europe.
It'll break the bank, you know, our little piggy bank. And then during the course of playing for the Best Of and making, you know, another run with Human Drama, I'll probably get decided how I'm going to finish up the solo project and how I'm going to get it out.
Yeah.
And that'll take a year, so.
So you're pretty well booked for the next few years.
Who knows? You know, probably for the next couple at least.
So is there anything final you'd like to add?
Well, you know, I just like to always say thank you to everyone who does listen to my music and who appreciates it. That makes me feel good, makes me feel valid, and I really do appreciate how everyone has spread the word of Human Drama, you know, word of mouth, because that is my biggest form of promotion, and I also think it's the best.
All right, Human Drama's newest CD, The Best of Human Drama, In a Perfect World, is available now on Amazon.com, TowerRecords.com, MP3.com, and other online merchants. Are you guys in Tower and other major chains?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I thought so. But, and for more information on Human Drama, visit their website at www.humandrama.net or www.tangledweb.com.
Actually, it's
thistangledweb.com.
Right.
You can also find their CDs there along with some other cool Human Drama merchandise. On December 3rd, Johnny will be at Communion in Beverly Hills for a special acoustic performance. Tickets are just $10. And Human Drama will be in LA on December 4th at Scream. Time 11:30 p.m. Tickets $10 or $7 with a membership to Scream. This will be Human Drama's only LA performance. For more information, call 323-460-6630. Now, you've got quite a history at Scream. Is it going to be good to go back there?
You know, it's already been good because I've been back in touch with the original promoter.
Uh-huh.
And kind of renewed our friendship. And yeah, it's you know, a little sentimental kind of in a way. So I look forward to a really great show.
Yeah. All right, well, I'd like to thank you for being my guest this evening, Johnny. We're going to play something off your new CD. Is there anything in particular you'd like to hear?
Whatever you choose. You make the call.
Well, I think we're going to do Love's Way. I've always liked that one.
Great.
Thanks, Johnny.
And thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's Love Way off of The Best of Human Drama.
Just love's way.